It's Chris Hill's Performance Car of the Week. The Hillman Motor Company was formed from a sewing machine manufacturer during the 1870s. Led by Hilbert Herman and Cooper, the pair launched their first mechanised vehicle in 1885. The culmination of this advanced technology resulted in the fabulous Hillman Imp Van. Launched in 1965, the Hillman Imp Van was best suited for the simple man and especially favoured by all manner of tradespersons. The Hillman Imp Lovers Club described the van as not just a windowless estate, but went on to list, it had no fancy grille, it does have a nice dashboard, it is spartan and sturdy like a working car, only one swivelling quarter light, only one sun visor, no carpet, no temperature gauge, no carbon in the front compartment, thick wheels and strong bumpers, need I go on? So with its steady 35 brake horsepower engine, its shiny paintwork and ability to tackle the biggest loads, this week's Chris Hill Performance Car of the Week is the Hillman Imp Van. Hey up, Chris. Come back. You've left your drain rods and your plunger.
Coming up on the podcast, Wyre seemed to score a convincing win at Hull, with the victory leading to the sacking of the Early Birds coach. Just how would you like to see Ben Murdoch Masilla wear his hair? We go live to Delamere Forest to catch up with Springwatch. Daniel becomes all positive and Callum brings us analysis. Not forgetting there are three things that you can be sure of in life: statistics, shatistics, and Sam's Ben Curry lies. Plus we predict not one but two Warrington games. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and on today's podcast, Steve Price comes up with a result I certainly didn't see coming. But to look further into this and to get their reflective views, where are my two podcasting sensors that register everything coming? Yes, firstly, he's known for his sonic analytical pulse, seeing through the strongest of defences with his statistical infrared scrutiny and his radio telescope ready to probe Ben Curry at a moment's notice. It's Sam Jodrell Sank Sankey.
Hello, good evening, Rob. Yes, Jodrell Bank, home to the world-famous Lovell telescope. I remember fondly those school trips.
I actually called you Jodrell Sank Sankey.
I don't know.
Well, I did that, but just one of those things. Do you remember the little radio telescope they had there that you could actually move around? And we found that UFO, we got a big spike on the graph paper. Do you remember that? Stop shaking your head, Dennis. But also introducing a pod sensor gazing through a dim spectroscopy of light, a man in the twilight of his life receiving all the signals via a homemade analog, two cups on a piece of string, and the only transverse wave he'll be giving off is when he suffers a nasty fall and pulls the emergency cord for the warden. It's Dennis, we've lost transmission, test card picture, way well.
Yep, that's me. Yep, coming in loud and clear.
You pissed there, Dennis?
No, just slightly greased.
What is it you're drinking there, brandy or whiskey?
This is a new marmalade gin from... from Harrogate, Slingsbury. Marmalade gin.
We should probably point out before we start tonight that this is the first recording we've done where it's Sydney morning time and Warrington in the UK evening time. It's been a few weeks, boys, and clearly you're both pissed, so I'll hold this together this week. Right, let's move on to the game. It is away at Hull. Final score was shit Hull 4, Warrington 38. The Wyre team was Ratchford, Charnley, Gelling came back in, King, Lynham, Austin, Widdop, a fine romance, Hill, Danny Walker, Cooper, Murdoch Masilla, friend of the podcast, Curry, Jason Clark, and the interchange bench was Daryl Clark, Philbin, Mamo, and Akawala. Let's have a listen to the highlights.
Walker sweeps the pass away to Austin. Austin, a little step and another one, and the line is in. They could be in trouble here. They will be in trouble here, surely, because Toby King trundling, Tom Lynham finishing.
Oh, that's smart. That's really, really smart from Tom Lynham. What a great finish. Now then, what will Toby King do this time after he's been given he'll get the offload Beautiful. Away and Widdop will get the try. That's what he'll do. That's what he should have done first time, maybe. 15 metres or so out. Hull backtracking once again. Here is Austin. Austin onto Widdop. Widdop, nice ball. Gelling this time, no mistake. Gelling gets the try. Warrington extend their lead. Warrington threaten again, and Murdoch Masilla is built up ahead of steam, and they won't stop him as he thunders in under the posts. And the Hull fans are heading for the exit. Mike Cooper, and Cooper able to offload again. Daryl Clark, little skip, and then Clark just skating up the middle and gets the pass away to Widdop. Widdop sells one dummy, sells two, and gets his second try of the night. And Warrington dominating.
There's not much sign of Hull doing much damage, is there?
The damage is being done for Warrington when the ball...
Oh, Austin is through! Austin! This time he's got that down without any doubt. He'll get his second of the game.
Well, for about the first 6 minutes, Sam, I don't think Hull actually touched the ball, or when they did try and touch it, they dropped it.
We absolutely dominated those opening exchanges, and obviously when Austin stepped over, it was as if 12 months had gone by in a heartbeat and he was back to his favourite pitch.
Yeah, it was. The fourth minute, wide strike first with the try from Blake Austin, as Sam's just said, under the sticks, followed by a Ratchford conversion to make it 6-0. Dennis, are you still on the motorway at this time?
Yeah, I was probably about junction 30 of the M5. Didn't see any of this.
How was junction 30 on the M5?
Well, it was quite empty, actually, at this time. I was doing about 83 miles an hour. No, I should say 75 miles an hour. No, that's even too much. 70 miles an hour on cruise control, just getting back for the second half. But, I mean, I was quite disappointed, really, because obviously this is the last game of we'll see of the season. Now the season's going to get cancelled.
So morbid, aren't you? Well, we had a bit of a gap now, because on the 36th minute, Tommy Lynham cleverly slides over in the corner. And Ratchford converts from the sideline to make it 12-0, Sam. What happened for 32 minutes between that first try and the second try?
I think it's fair to say during that first half, both teams looked like they were very low on confidence. That's being charitable. The other way of saying it was a very, very poor display of attacking rugby by both teams.
Well, that's another way of saying it. Go on.
Shit. But it was, carrying on from last week against Castleford, it was great effort in defence by us. And especially that first 20 minutes, we really dominated but didn't capitalise. But as you say, 36 minutes, the knock-on that was picked up by my friend Ben and passed nicely on to Toby King, who trundled. Did the commentator say trundled along?
Galloped. I'd say galloped. Galloped. Yeah.
Before giving it to Lynham. And that little bit of luck to change the whole game.
He is throwing some nice balls out, King, at the moment. He threw a lovely ball out to Lynham last week. I mean, I know this week it was just a case of give it here. But nevertheless, at least he passed the ball over. Dennis, 36 minute. What junction are you up to?
Probably about 24 at this stage. So just going past the Gordano services. And I looked over and I saw the coffee. And I thought, has Gareth actually found his perfect coffee in this match? I mean, looking at the actual, or listening, should I say, because I wasn't looking at my phone at the match at the time while I was driving. That'd be a really stupid thing to say. Sorry. But listening, it sounded like that, yeah, they were struggling in the first half, big time.
I think in the first half, Widdop was just percolating, really. I don't think he'd actually been served at the table. He was just floating around. Looking at our forwards in the first half, Sam, Hill and Cooper, everyone's talked about this whole pack dominating teams this year, but they certainly didn't dominate us last night.
They didn't dominate us, but their biggest asset this year was banned for the match. So I think that, similar to when we played St Helens, and Wormsley got injured just before kickoff, and similar against Castleford when Liam Watts was missing, we've had a little bit of luck in that the opposition's pack has been downed by their biggest forward.
Okay. Well, 48th minute after the break, Widdop crosses after a nice inside ball, again from Toby King. Ratchford misses the kick, and it's 16-0. We've seen this more than once now, haven't we, that Widdop is supporting on the inside the whole time. Not after he passes the ball. He's there ready to take it if we come back on the inside, which Patton didn't do at all last year. It makes a big difference to the team.
It does. And it's, in some ways, it looks a simple thing, but not all players do it. So it can't be that simple, can it? It's just that extra little intelligence, rugby intelligence, to suddenly think, right, that man's going on the outside, but there's a 20%, 30% chance it's going to come back on the inside to me. So I'm going to be there just in case. It's been there and been available, isn't it?
Well, Toby King absolutely slipped a lovely ball to Widdop. Dennis, at this time, are you on the slip road? Have you moved away from the motorway on the 48th minute, or are you still on it?
No, I'm actually sat at home in my front room at this point, because I did manage to get back for the second half. And I thought to myself, I need a drink now. So I was going to make a coffee. So I want to turn this round again now and say, let's say if Gareth Widdop at this point, you know, he's not done too much, but in the second half, he goes on to make, an impression. What sort of coffee would you rate him at?
I would say on the second half performance, an espresso, because he really kicked in, didn't he? I mean, first half, I'd go flat white. It's not racist, is it? That's fine, isn't it? And then second half, no, I'd definitely go espresso. I think he percolated nicely. He was a quick, sharp snap and turned the game around. And in the 56th minute, Gelling strolls over in the corner, having previously gone close moments earlier. Ratcher's conversion's wide again, and we're 20-0 up. Sam, you sent a text at this moment when Gelling went over at 20-0. Do you want to explain that text?
No, I sent the text when he went over and dropped the ball. And I think it said, fucking idiot.
Do you?
I mean, let's be honest, though. Gelling, I sort of tend to agree with Sam's comment that, you know, when he's offloading, it's mostly to the floor and it gets quite frustrating when you're watching it. But, you know, even so, him at centre, from what we've had in the centres, you know, this year so far, he is probably the most dangerous centre that we've got.
Dennis, without a doubt, I said it before he had to miss a few games, that his sheer strength and physical presence will make a difference as long as he keeps hold of the ball enough. He's no doubt he's got power.
Made a huge difference in comparison to Brand. I mean, you know, Brand was out there, but you don't really know he's there. Whereas Gelling, he's a nuisance, he's strong. He made some really powerful runs as well. There's a couple of runs in the first half where he got away. And then, of course, he scored that try and the handcuffs came off, which was excellent, quoting Sam's text.
Not sure he needed to do that gesture to the crowd, but there you go.
All right, 59th minute, Ben Murdoch-Missilla cruises in under the sticks following a crisscross move at Ratchford cannot miss, and it's 26-0. He seemed to be back to his best last night, Sam Murdoch-Missilla. He was dominant, making good yards, scored a good try.
Yes, and I've perhaps got a bit of news on that, which I might talk about shortly. Yeah. But
is this statistic that his bubble only fell out once last night as opposed to the average of three? Is that the statistics you're looking at?
Not the statistic I'm talking about, but really, now, as a team, before our eyes in that 40 minutes, we saw us growing confidence with every passing minute whilst Hull fell apart. And when you think about it, that could have been us, really. But I think strength of character last week to dig out that win against Castleford, when it could have gone the other way. And as soon as we got on top last night, we just grew and grew and grew in confidence without wanting to, should I quote Steve? It's been a very resilient couple of weeks, hasn't it? And it's a big step forward for us.
Very good, Sam. Very good.
We do like
it was on that 59th minute when Murdoch-Missilla scored that the whole crowd basically left. They'd had enough. That was it for them. Yeah, it wasn't good at all, was it? 70th minute and the birthday boy's in again, Widdop dummying with options plenty to score. Easy kick for Ratchford and it's 32-0. I thought that try summed up Widdop quite well, Sam, that he just worked out what was going to happen. He could have gone right, but he just calmed it all down, showed a little dummy and he just cruised over.
Well, once again, he was in support of the break, wasn't he? He was in support of Clark's break. And then he looked like he had all the time in the world he didn't even sell a huge dummy like Austin does. He just offered as though he was going to go right. Two players went right. He stepped back on the inside and under the sticks.
Yes. Dennis, at this stage, you were nicely tucked at home there with your feet up. What were your thoughts? I mean, you'd only seen the second half. You must have thought it was just one-way traffic the whole way.
Yeah, well, you could tell that basically Hull were a beaten side. They had nothing to offer. I think the only question was is that I don't really know whether Widdop and Austin have actually sort of got that combination just yet. It just seemed a bit like, you know, a bit flaky on one side, you know.
Well, it almost became attacking practice because in the 72nd minute, this time it's a dummy from Austin who goes over to score his second try. Widdop takes the kick and it's 38-0. The one thing we really got out of this game was not only confidence, Sam, but it was a case of we actually practiced our offence, didn't we? We had so many times we got down their end and were able to throw the ball around and get some combinations going.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as I said a few minutes ago, it was that second half that really built it, wasn't it? Because in the first half, let's be fair, we looked like we were going to struggle to score. Both teams did. But the moment we got the daylight, the moment we got that third try, it was as if all the pressure was lifted and they started to play with a smile on the face.
Okay.
Without getting too far ahead of yourselves, though, but, I mean, let's be fair. We created that situation where basically Hull crumbled, but we were basically in the second half playing a side that didn't really want to be there and were quite clearly of like, you know, hung up the gloves, Dennis, and the boots.
Dennis,
and so on.
I agree with you. And if we'd have done that without seeing what happened last week, I'd have thought, well, we were just playing a crap team. But last week, against a much better opposition, we really dug in and kept them to 8 points. Was it last week? Was it 9-8 last week? Kept them to 8 points last week. And we've kept another team to 4 points this week. And even then, I think those 4 points came because we were trying to be fancy in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, it was in the final minute. It was a blemish on Wise Night, wasn't it? Kieran Buchanan crosses for Hull. The kick was unsuccessful. And the final score was Wire 38, Hull 4. In the start of this intro, I said Wire seemed to come up with a convincing win. I think that's what it all comes down to, isn't it? We seem to have come up with a convincing win. But as we've all said, Hull were absolutely dire on the night. Attendance was 10,214. Let's have a listen to what Steve Price said post-match.
Steve Price, what a brilliant win tonight. 7 tries. What stood out for you?
Really pleased with our defence, especially in that first half when we're defending our try line for a number of sets. And you know, I thought Benny Curry had some big game-changing moments there to, you know, run down Carlos there and, you know, defend our try line in multiple areas of the game. I thought I was, you know, I was really pleased. And, you know, there's some fantastic tries scored and, the romance between Blake and Gareth slowly coming together. So, yeah, I was very pleased with all.
Yeah, what did you make of your two halfback their pairing tonight?
Yeah, I saw, you know, big improvement last week and I saw, you know, even greater tonight. So that's the main pleasing thing for me is, you know, they're slowly coming together. And as I said, it was always going to take a little bit of time. But, yeah, it was a really strong performance tonight. They're a quality team, Hull. And, it was a good 80-minute performance.
First away win since July. Monkey off the back?
Yeah, it is. It's good to get a win away from home. We mixed a few things up this week. So, look forward to Hull KR next Sunday.
Well, you could almost feel, couldn't you? Hey, just the relief in his voice. He got a little bit giddy. He was all smiles. His little face went all pink. He was almost flirting with the girl from Sky.
He was. And I'm taking credit for this win.
Oh, yeah?
Was that it?
Yeah. On Tuesday night, I had a little sit down for about an hour with Steve and had a little chat through a few things. And that's the result. That's what I'm saying. I had a nice hour with Steve and we talked about many things, including rugby, and we've come up with that win. It's all down to me. Thank you very much.
Is that after a bottle of Albarino or something, is it?
No, we weren't drinking it. Well, I had a coffee, he had some water, and we just had a little chat.
Was this similar to when Sitiliti Akawala invited that chav for a coffee this week? Was that what happened, Sam? Did he call you up and say, I need a word with you, Sankey?
No, I did genuinely see Steve Price for about an hour in the week, but it was me and seven other people while we were discussing funding for the scholarship lads. But I have to say, outside of the discussion on the scholarship lads, it was he was very open, very honest about how down they were and disappointed. That's the wrong disappointed, I would say, in the way they played, in particular, obviously against Leeds, but the couple of weeks leading up to that, and how they were changing things around this week, travelling down to the game at Hull earlier than normal, and trying to make it a different event to find that win away from home. And you know what? Fair play to him. He deserved to have a smile on his face at the end of that match, didn't he?
I had a similar experience this week, and they thought I had, when I was on about that, I had this chat with someone famous, and I said, oh, I'm sure he's been in a film. I mentioned this, that, and the other, and I was really sort of starstruck and this, that, and the other. They then sort of sent me to the doctors immediately and wanted to check me out for that virus.
Jesus. Are you going on that virus, Dennis? You all right? You're in lockdown now, working from home?
Yeah. Yeah, working from home next week. That's it. It's all over. The world's going to end soon.
Thing about the podcast, we can just continue, can't we? Even if we don't have any matches. Yeah. I mean, we just talk shit every week anyway, so it doesn't make any difference.
So listen, what we've come up with is that we're going to simulate the next few games on the podcast. Yeah, we're going to simulate them. This is me releasing the news now. And we're going to obviously make comment and describe how the match went and review how everybody performed every week. So something for everybody to look forward to.
Okay. Well, looking through the team the other night, Sam, I thought one person that really stood out, you know, didn't play any better than anyone else, but clearly is a better fit in the team, and that was Akawala rather than Lewis Johnson. Akawala makes yards, he's powerful. I can't understand why on earth he swapped them round in the first place when we went to that game at Leeds.
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because I've actually pulled Sitter's stats out. 18 tackles, 2 misses in that, but 11 carries for 105 metres. So almost 10 carries, 10 metres per carry. And he really did make a difference when he came on the pitch, driving forward on the back of Daryl Clark's little scoots, really made a difference. And I thought it was a perfect way to answer the idiotic thing that came out on social media last week. Perfect way.
What was the thing that came out on social media?
A couple of lads had a go at him, but not just had a go at him, gave him a character assassination, only for Sitter to actually reply to their tweet and offer, did they want to go for a coffee?
Nice. Would you like to go for a coffee with me?
Yeah, certainly. Why not? Oh,
thank you. Let's go back again to the fact that Hull was shit. There were a couple of times in the game that we got away with things that were just idiotic in what we did. A couple of occasions, we kicked on the second or third tackle.
Yes.
I think there was on one occasion close to their line where Toby King kicked on the second tackle. The camera went up to Steve Price, who didn't show any animation at all. He seemed fine with that, completely on the walkie-talkie. And then the try right at the end, which they scored, Walker gave them, I think, wasn't it? Walker tried some silly little kick through in the very last minute, which led to them getting the ball. And it went the other way. Okay, right. Well, it's time. This is it. Ben Curry's Curry of the Week, Sam. Now, bear in mind this week, he did go off. So we're calling it this week Ben Curry's Takeaway Curry of the Week.
Yes. Interesting. His stats were still very good. But I think his real major contribution actually probably goes down as a missed tackle. Tuvi Mary made that break. Ben Curry chased him down, put a hand on him, and then obviously slipped off for Ratchford to finish the tackle. So actually, Curry's made 50 metres backtracking there to chase down a centre and stop a breakaway try.
And is he a centre, that bloke? Is he a centre, or was he just filling in the centre? He is a centre.
No, proper centre. Right. And that actually statistically goes down as a missed tackle.
You see, can I just stop you there, Sam? This is the insight of Sam's stats, isn't it? You see, he's seen a missed tackle, yet he still managed to turn it round into a Ben Curry positive there. That's well, it. I mean, really, the answer to that is he shouldn't have had to run back 50 yards. But the way Sam's put spin on this.
It's Jason Clark who gave the interception. So there you go. So I'm going to give our very first sponsor of the podcast was Paul Heesam's Gentleman's Hairdressers. I was in there today. I was in there today. And,
he hasn't paid any money. We're cutting that out. Carry on, Sam. Yeah, start again.
He said he must be at least a Gialfresi, maybe a Madras.
Dennis, right. Dennis, heatometer, where have you got Ben Curry's takeaway this week?
Well, looking at the heatometer this week, ranging from 1 to 11, we have Ben Curry starting, as we did at the start of the season, as Rogan Josh, moving up to Abuna, second week, third week, getting up to Di Piazza, and then peaking at Gialfresi. Now we're arriving at 9 out of 11, Madras.
Swedish is Madras.
Pichkari mat maro.
Now, Sam complained last week of bullying in the podcast workplace, an allegation the podcast takes very seriously and categorically denies. Workplace bullying is defined as a persistent pattern of mistreatment from others that causes emotional harm. It can include such tactics as verbal, psychological, or humiliation. So here for another look at the player's data, an absolute tosser that doesn't even realise his own family despises him and whose picture of his polygynism... It's over to Sam Sankey's statisticals.
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's twat stats. No. Shitistics. No. Statistics. Yes. Statistics. Yes. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
Well, that serves yourself right, doesn't it, for trying to be too clever, didn't
basically,
it?
What that means, Sam, is three bollocks, and I've just fallen over your bollocks. So there we go. I had too much of your bollocks in my mouth. Couldn't get it out.
Oh, dear. Right, let's move on. Okay, we're six games in for some teams, but... some of our postponements as well. I thought I'd look at the overall statistics within Super League and see where one or two of the Warrington players stand.
Here we go. So, Dennis, I guarantee Ben Curry's in this.
I thought I'd choose tackles first because in the top 20 tacklers of Super League, Danny Houghton at Hull is first with 290 tackles. Who do you think is second in the entire league? Ben Curry.
Jesus.
Okay, so we'll move on.
By Ben Curry?
No, we'll move on from Ben.
Sam's got in his mouth.
I've picked up three other stats, and I want to see whether you notice somebody who's in there in each of them. Tackle busts in the league, we've got nobody in the top 10. Bevan French is first. Bevan French is first with 39. Our leading player at 13th with 26 tackle busts, Toby King.
Oh, Jesus.
Meters made in the entire league. Josh Griffin of Hull is top. Josh Charnley, second, must be the name Josh. And playing tonight, Reese Williams, our old player, is third. But lying in 13th place in the entire league with 663 metres, Toby King.
Why is he always in 13th?
Well, loads in the entire league. Sonny Bill Williams, 23 offloads. Second place in the entire league.
Hang on. 23 offload. This is Sonny Bill Williams offloads. He's second, right? Where's the stat backing that up? How many went to his players? Because at Warrington he threw about 9 and 7 went to the opposition. So shouldn't that be offload fuck ups?
No. It must be a proper throw backwards and not an error. If it went straight to the opposition, it's classed as an error.
I think he offloaded to Toby King
13 times.
Yeah. So I felt it was interesting. As you started to go through the statistics.
That's right. Yeah. Remember what you're doing.
Yeah. Come on.
He's not the best player, but consistently in the top 20, in the, all players in Super League, King is showing up time and time again. And I think it shows the improvement in him. Yeah. And overall, as a team, we are leading Super League in completed offloads and completed meters going forward. We're doing something right.
When you say completed meters going forward, what's an uncompleted meter going forward?
It goes 49 centimeters. or when you run sideways, like we did.
Oh, dear.
All right. Now, some Warrington fans can never be so pessimistic, but others like Daniel embrace Winston Churchill's quote, "A pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity, an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty." So here's Daniel optimistically taking a look at the positives in Wires play.
It's a break in the norm for me this week, as rather than being my usual negative Nelly self, I've been asked to look for some positive things to talk about regarding Wires' 2020 season so far. So I'm going to start with my man, Mr. Ben Curry. The number 11 has been scintillating so far this season. He has looked resilient in defence, Steve Price's favourite word, and has also been pretty impressive going forward too. A couple of really nice offloads have led to tries, such as Ratchford's against Wakefield and Tom Lynham against Castleford. Next to Curry in the second row has been Mr. Ben Murdoch-Masilla, who I think has had a really good start to the season actually. And despite the news that he'll be leaving for the New Zealand Warriors in the NRL at the end of this year, if we can get a similar kind of performance level to what we've had so far for the rest of the season, everyone will be happy. Jason Clark at loose forward has also massively improved from last season and is having a more telling impact on the game in both attack and defence, and is becoming the player we thought we would get when we signed from South Sydney. I think Tom Lynham has improved from his performances last year as well. He's scored 3 tries so far at the time of recording and is Wires' top scorer, all of which have come at home. He's also looked pretty good in defence, and he's been part of a left-edge defence that was criticised so much last year, but actually has only conceded 1 try all season, and that was against Wigan when the Wire team were down to 11 men. So the left-edge defence has been arguably the biggest improvement so far this season. Home form as well. Wire have beaten St Helens and Castleford so far this year, 2 sides which we lost to at home last season. So the form at the Halliwell Jones is good, 100% record at time of recording, 3 out of 3, as well as that nervy win over Toronto. For me, Wire's player of the season so far has been Stephen Ratchford. It's a toss-up between him and Curry, but Ratchford has looked back to his best, incredible in defence and searing going forward as well, and pretty good from the touchline kicks as also. As well as Ratchford, we've had Matty Ashton playing at fullback as well. It looks like we've really unearthed a gem with Ashton, and with Keenan Brand and Danny Walker also making decent starts to the season, it looks like we're getting a younger crop of players through, which is good, which is very, very good, because it's something we've not seen much of from Steve Price so far this season. And of course, the biggest positive of all, yes, I know Austin and Widdop haven't really got going yet, but Deck Patton hasn't played a single minute.
Okay, so Daniel on board there as well. I think he mentioned young Ben Curry in a positive light. Yes. So that's Daniel this week. It was Phil Clark last week. It was Steve Hogg, one of our followers, that messaged us in the week. And Steve Price as well. Oh, you know, I saw it coming, boys. I saw it coming.
Ah, dear.
Well, right, a couple enough. Of things. One, he mentioned Jason Clark. I mean, I was a big fan of Jason Clark last year. I don't know. Do you think, go on, Sam, do you think he's got something to offer?
He's the second best or worst, if you want to put it that way. He gives away, he's given
completed
away the
second, yards.
Second most penalties he's given away in Super League this year.
Has he really?
He has really. 8 penalties he's given away.
Who's the top one? Chris Hill.
No, Chris Hill didn't play for three games, did he? That's he's well down there. Sal from Hull has given 9 penalties away.
Just another couple of things he mentioned. Left edge defence, we didn't mention that from last year. We were banging on about that, and he has pointed out that that's much better this year.
Well, can I say, Dennis, that I'm not in charge of statistics? So, I mean, that's down to Sam, isn't it? It was 7 episodes in, and he's not come up with one statistical fact about the left edge.
Depp Patton, I think we'll all agree, hasn't played this year.
Okay, it's on to the Twitter vote. This week's vote was, with Ben, Big Ben Murdoch-Masilla set to leave Warrington, how would you like to see Ben wear his hair until the end of the season? We had 4 options. They were A, braided with beads, B, high bobble. I know you're a fan of the high bobble there, Dennis. C, long down and flowing. That was quite nice. And D, something new. It got a whole heap of votes, this. Started slowly, but then, of course, Big Ben came in on the act as well, didn't he? We got a tweet from Big Ben saying that he was thinking of shaving it all off. So in the end, braided beads got 25%. High bubble got only 13%. Not liked amongst the fans. Long down and flowing was an early leader until Ben said he wanted to shave it all off with 21%. But the winner, and clear winner by 41%, was something new. We went back to Ben, telling him the results, but he came back with a tweet to say he'd had a word with his missus, and she said no.
Oh, so, that's a shame.
Not very good. David Fafita got in contact with the podcast as well. He suggested he goes for a mullet, which would look a bit frightening, wouldn't it, if he had a mullet?
Do you think he wants to meet up for a haircut?
Oh, Paul Heasons.
He's done a coffee. Yeah, we could meet him at the hairdresser's and do an interview while he's in the chair.
Well, I think with the warmer weather around the corner, he will change his hairstyle. I mean, did you know that spring starts on Friday?
Hello, my name's Chris Packham, and welcome to Spring Watch. We received an email a few months ago from Warrington Wolves asking if they could appear on Spring Watch, as their CEO Carl Fitzpatrick continues to think outside the rugby league bubble. Well, I'm pleased to say, joining me here in the beautiful surroundings of Delamere Forest, a selection of the Warrington Wolves players. Hi, lads.
Good eye.
Hi. How do you?
Now, once upon a time, up until as late, would you believe it, as the 16th century, wolves would have roamed the forest such as Delamere. But not today, lads.
Oh.
We are, however, still to be blessed with a bird that until recently was thought to be extinct, before it was amazingly spotted here at Delamere. Yes, it's the beautiful Drepanaris pacificia, or better known to you and me as the tiny, tiny mamma bird. We've made our way into the hide, and if we're really quiet, lads, we may be able to hear the tiny male mamma bird calling for its mate. Yes, there it is. I'm going to try and find it now with my binoculars. Yes, I spotted it way up high there in the alpine branches. Who would like to look through my binoculars?
Oh, you might. It's
Yes, you young man, step forward. What's your name, son?
My name's Mamo.
I know it's a Mamo bird, but what's your name?
Yes, Mamo.
Yes, yes, you're all excited, but give me your name, son, and I'll hand you the binoculars.
Yes, Mamo.
Oh, for fuck's sake. This is why I didn't want you on with such amateurs.
No,
I just knew
Mamo.
We should have booked it on.
Mamo bird, but my name's Mamo. You don't seem to
care. Michaela Strachan would have been better with you. Like, I'm fucking Hitman and her, rather than this Spring Watch. Go on, all of you, fuck off. And no, you can't see Michaela's badger.
Oh, Christ almighty. I can't believe we put that out.
You thought he could do a good Chris Packham impression, and that's basically all it was.
Well, I was going to say, when's Melvin Bragg been doing Spring Watch? When's the South Wank show coming up?
Oh dear! Right, let's move on.
No, we're not moving on. Can I just ask you about that? Can you do that bird song again for the memo? Something in that.
Right, let's move on to social media and the listener of the week. We heard from Joel and Rutter. Oh God, here we go. Ben Curry had my nose dribbling and my eyes watering.
Phone 111.
Robert Lawson, 4 out of 10 performance. We beat a 1 out of 10 performance team.
This is about last night's match, was it?
Yeah, this is about last night's match. So saying we're only 4 out of 10.
That's a bit hard.
Bit harsh there, Robert. But I can see what he's trying to say, really. Drew, that whole team are more shit than we have been. Radsford's gone and we still have Price. Maybe the wire is on the up. So sort of a contradicting a few facts there.
We haven't really talked about what happened with Price and everything last week. Remember when I interviewed him about the attitude and things like that? We've not really talked about it yet, have we? But, you know, he's... Well, do you not think he's actually fixed the problem of the offence as well at the same time this week?
I think that it was a... Wasn't it? It was the perfect storm for him to go there, wasn't it? Because Hull are obviously very poor at the moment and they were right on the cusp of losing their coach. And their performance was absolutely abysmal. So you can't take anything out of our performance. It was very good. And the romance has started to flourish between Widdop and Austin. It's just we all got to be a little bit apprehensive in how well we played because the opposition was so shit.
But being that the season's finished... do you think that he's actually fixed everything now? I mean, the season's going to be cancelled anyway, so he's probably going to get away with that. But
I think it's a bit like, you know, like when I was young and I used to go to Mr. Smith's and so you'd pull me aside, Dennis, and you'd say, look at the state of you last week. You had holes in your trousers. You've not polished your shoes. You've not combed your hair. You're smelling a little bit. And then the following week, I go back in a nice fresh shirt, pleated. You know, I look the part. And then I pull in the nightclub, but she's a minger. And you think to yourself, well, he's improved and maybe he could have come away with something better, but he's only come away with a minger. It's a bit hard to know, isn't it? I'm saying holler a minging. That's basically
a minger and you have to go down the SDD limit.
I'm not getting involved with that conversation.
I think Minger plays centre, doesn't he, for Hull?
It's Robert Lawson saying Hull are only a 1 out of 10.
Right, Alfie Garnett, friend of the podcast. Wire was flattered by Hull's ineptitude. Price says Hull are a good side. I say bullshit. We had a clunky combination with Widdop and Austin, but it did look better than past weeks. However, they are two big players that may be struggling to find who is number one. More questions than answers.
I'd like to just say that if you listen to both of those, Widdop and then Austin, Widdop is more of a realist. At least he comes out and says, you know what? Yeah, it's getting better, but I'm still not at my best. Whereas I think Austin's just lost in his own sort of like, you know, I don't know. What's the word?
You want to have a bloody coffee with Mike? Why don't you have a coffee with Mike? On what you're on the back of Costa?
Yeah, no worries.
Scott W, much better. Feels good to finally get an away win, albeit against an utterly shit Hull side. Austin and Widdop starting to show signs of a decent partnership. Hopefully we'll kick into gear. We'll kick into gear now and follow it up against the other lot next week. Austin loves Hull. He does like playing in Hull, doesn't he, Sam? He loves Hull.
Yes, yeah. And this word shit keeps coming up a lot, doesn't it, in today's...
heard from a bloke called Dave Birch. Not heard from this guy before. I've started watching Equestrian. I cannot believe I've wasted all these years ingrained in rugby league. Had I known my love of show jumping was so strong, I'd have bought a pony years ago, riding it completely naked, except for my headband, through Warrington Market. In a similar fashion to Lady Godiva shouting, bring back Depp Patton. He needs another 10 games.
I think Dave needs a show of his own. Oh, he's got one. He's got one, hasn't he?
And Gareth, he finally sums it up by saying he's waiting for the second appearance of keeping up any appearances. Thank you, Gareth. Yes, it's good to see someone there.
As long as we don't have a season two of Spring Watch, then I'm happy with that.
Jesus, right. Okay, let's move on to the email of the week. Now, last week, really, I didn't really seem to have any conclusion to it, did it? But this week, it is someone looking for someone. So I think if we could probably put these two people together, we'd be doing our bit for the podcast. It starts, Dear What Would Brian Bevan Say? I'm a retired engineer and have lots of time on my hands. So as a Wire fan, I'm really enjoying listening to the podcast. I thought I'd write to you, having listened to your Our Wilderspool soundbite, to tell you my Wilderspool story. During my career as an engineer, I worked on numerous projects across the Northwest, from new housing estates that are not so new anymore, to Chester Zoo, GMEX, and have even helped the construction of Manchester Airport's second runway. My main employment was a concrete bore testing, analysing salt encroachment that incurs in concrete structures. As I mentioned, I'm a Warrington fan, so it was just my luck that the first project as an apprentice, which came along when I was freshly out of Leeds Poly, was at Wilderspool Stadium. You may remember the main Wilderspool stand burnt down in 1982, and the company I worked for tendered for the new stand and was successful as part of the rebuilding project. Had it not been for my first job being at Wilderspool, I may well have quit engineering there and then. I learnt to my naive surprise it was cold on building sites, and nearly all the blokes on the construction site took the piss out of young apprentices like me, sending me to the stores just for their amusement for the likes for me to ask for foolish things such as a bubble in a spirit level or a long stand. You get my drift. Anyway, there was a slighter older man than me working on the site. He'd be in his late 20s. He took me under his wing and he looked after me. His name was Freddie. He lay most of the foundation concrete. I cannot remember Freddie's surname, and I don't think he was a Wire. Sorry. Come on. Oh, dear. Oh, go on.
Edit. Oh, dear. Come on, I'm listening now.
Okay, come on. I cannot remember Freddie's surname, and I don't think he was a Wire fan, but I do seem to remember Freddie having a Gloucestershire accent, and he worked for a company called Wests.
Oh, dear.
If anyone in construction remembers him working in the north, or you're listening, Freddie, I'd love to catch up, as we never did go for that drink, as you always insist. We never did go for that drink. You always insisted on staying back until last, locking up the Wilderspool site. Oh, keep up the good work, podcasters. My favourite section is Sam Statistics. Kind regards, Phil Flatson.
I mean, it's the last podcast, though. None of this matters.
Oh, dear. Okay, last episode, Dennis decided he'd come up with a way of to filter our future bad marquee signings with his resilient tent test questionnaire. So back again to Rettie's camping equipment. No, it's not Sid James or Bernard Breslau, but our very own Carry On. Yes, here we go again. It's time for Dennis's Tacklebacks.
Tacklebacks.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
The last tackle bags of 2020, as rugby league will be cancelled for the rest of the year.
Oh, God, you're so happy.
Last week, we discussed the Resilitent test, a means of identifying a marquee player's resilience before signing for a club, almost like a psychometric test for the rugby league players. The test consisted of a variety of questions to determine how resilient a player is and how they would fit into the players' group. On the back of this idea, I would have a chat with Carl, accompany him to his next Australia trip to conduct the test with an interview with a player Just need to work out what time of year that would be. What's the best time, Rob, to come over to Australia?
Well, probably now, actually. March is lovely. Weather's nice in March. You settle down. 25 All degrees right. every day. Lovely.
Well, we've got plenty of time now because the season's cancelled. Anyway, another excellent response to my sack. It was full this week. So I had 91% in agreement with me. I had something in from someone called Radioactive Strap-On. They said, I like it. Can you do one for the coaches and add an English and grammar test section? Is that you, Rob?
Well, yes, I'd like that. That's a good idea. Very good idea, Dennis. Take that man's name and number.
Okay, it's Radioactive Strap-On. It was.
I'll Google that later.
Google it. No, 8%. This was from my mum's a dustman. She said, or he said, depending which way you look at it. Careful. This test is just too hard for rugby players. Can't you get them to just put up a tent as a test? That's a good.
It's true. Maybe.
I had 1% other Margaret. Margaret, so she said, I should have used that test before marrying my husband. He's nowhere to be seen in a crisis. Hopeless at erecting tents. And when making love, he always ejaculates too soon.
Oh, Margaret, there was no need for the last bit.
I know. She's obviously disappointed. Well,
I guess it is the last bit, isn't it, really?
Anyway, this week, we're seeing red or singing the blues. In 2004, don't sigh, in 2004 at the Athens Olympics, contestants in four combative sports, boxing, taekwondo, Greco-Roman wrestling and freestyle wrestling, were randomly assigned red and blue outfits. Oh. Now, in all four competitions, contestants wearing red won more fights. This was found to be consistent across all rounds and weight classes for each sport, so red was the most common winner. In 2004, the soccer tournament.
In what year?
2004.
I've got something in my nose. In 2004, soccer tournament, five teams were predominantly wearing red shirts from a different colour from the others. And five teams had significantly got better results in their red shirts across the competition. An analysis of the English Football League from 1946 to 2003, the proportion of league champions since that time corroborate with this red shirts winning substantially more often than expected on the basis of frequency and statistics. And my final point on this, since 1955, when Warrington won the last league championship, teams wearing red have won the title 33 times as opposed to teams wearing blue 16 times. So I've been doing a bit of research into this. I've looked at various different psychologies on this. Wearing red increases the heart rate and therefore strength. So athletes are obviously, you know, have got matching. Are you all right, Sam? Am I losing you?
Just coming around sniffling. From Freddie.
Yeah. Anyway, the heart rate and strength was measured before in the sporting event, and they found that the participant and the athletes had a higher heart rate, which was obviously giving them great strength rather than blue. We also had a judge's bias. So you can imagine in our game with the referee, there is always a perception that red is more dominant, and therefore they would always favour that sort of side wearing red when they're giving decisions. Redness enhances perceived aggression, dominance and attractiveness in men's faces. Something for you boys there. Red clothing increases the perception of dominance, aggression and anger. So when they're actually playing in a game, men wearing red are rated as more aggressive and dominant. There was no difference between blue and grey. So it just shows you that that's not really as popular. So basically no effects with blue and white. So when you look at the actual Super League and all the teams in there, basically, you know, within our team at the moment, we've got five teams wearing red and two really wearing blue. So when you look across the whole of the leagues, all three leagues, you've got about 11 teams wearing predominantly red, 12 blue. So it's quite equally sort of thing. So my suggestion to you boys is that Warrington change their colours.
No, blue no, to right, we'll have it.
So What do you think?
Well, does having a big bright red logo on the front of your chest make a difference?
Some may say with the introduction of that Hoover logo, it increases our chance with the amount of red on the kit. But I'll be discussing that next week with targets and symbols on shirts. So we can look at that side.
How does this work when Toronto are bottom and obviously their away kit's red and second bottom are Hull KR who play in red?
Well, if you've not noticed, they haven't played in red, Toronto. They've predominantly played in white in all of their games this year so far. So that's why they've not won.
Have you got anything on the stats that teams that play in red that complete successful yards in comparison to unsuccessful yards?
Yeah, well, I've got something tonight that during the second half, Salford playing in red overturned a deficit by completing more yards and beat Wigan Warriors, who tonight were playing in yellow.
Oh, well, there you have it. There you go.
A live, proof. Conclusive thing during the podcast that finished just as I was finishing my tackle bags. And just as a little side note, different stripes and hoops as well. Any comments on that? Stripes make you look taller, hoops make you look wider, and chevrons were from like the heraldry times, seemed to be worn from a character to make them sort of quite aggressive again. That's why you were.
So you think we should really go for a chevron red?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Excellent.
So if you think that's a good idea, then write to us at the usual things. Being that the season's cancelled now, I'll still be continuing Tackle Bags as a spin-off from the podcast. It'll be lasting about an hour every week, probably do it after 40-20 once they've finished their shite, and then I'll do my bit after.
For all insomniacs everywhere, Dennis's Tackle Bags will send you to sleep within 10 minutes.
Correct.
In your red pyjamas. Okay, he's been absent for a few weeks, but we don't get rid of him that easily. Back to bring the average age of the podcast down by over 20 years. Here's young Callum.
With a third of the season approaching, it hasn't been such a good start for Warrington at the start of 2020. It'll be interesting to see if Warrington can get a win on Mother's Day in the east of Yorkshire. One of three topics I want to talk about ahead of this matchup is head coaches and the fact that we're playing against a former one in Tony Smith. Ahead of the Castleford game, people were discussing win rates, and to be honest, Steve Price's isn't massively lower than Smith's. So when you look at it from a result situation, is it that bad and playing devil's advocate? Does Steve Price actually need to go? Is it just the players' attitudes? Or did the Challenge Cup really paper over cracks that are appearing once more? The performance against Cass was a vast improvement immediately the week after the horror show we saw in Leeds. Secondly though, I just want to give my thoughts on Gareth Widdop. People are already judging him after a handful of matches, expressing he'll be a flop, but I don't think he will be, and I think you've got to give him time. It'll be good to see him playing with Blake Austin in the months of June and July when the table really starts to take shape. Finally, the starting prop situation. Chris Hill or Joe Philbin? Coming off the bench, Joe is a great player, but our defence is stronger when both our starting props are in the line. So is it a case of starting Philbin, which will give Hill extra minutes to be able to be more effective in defence, or does Price stick to how it is? Also take into account the amount of penalties we concede when Hill is tired to when he's in full force. We saw it against Castleford. When he's got energy, he's hunting the packs down. He was hunting the Cass middle down. And that's when you can see Chris Hill putting in a real shift as opposed to when he's tired. You just got to see how Joe Philbin can react to starting. Will he put in as many good runs as he does? Do you, the fans, agree or disagree?
To add to Callum's analysis? Dennis?
I haven't actually got anything written down.
Sam?
No. I think he sums things up rather succinctly there.
Jesus. Oh dear. Okay, Wire are off to Hull again next week, but this time it's a trip to the Robins. Sam, we all remember Robin Tripp from Robin's Nest, but will Steve Price's fledglings be flying the nest come full-time on Sunday? Or Will they be all mad about the house?
Blimey, you're going back in time to remember them. Well, after somebody mentioned last week that we don't seem to look forward enough on the podcast and look at next week's games properly, I thought I'd take a look at Hull KR's form. Mm-hmm. Hull KR currently played, as we sit today.
Can I just say, sorry, Sam, to stop you. I know you've done an extra bit here, but we won't be playing this game.
It's going to be cancelled. If we were to play this game, Hull KR have currently played 6-1-1, 484 points, so only scoring 14 points a game, conceding 28 points a game, and at home, been beaten by Castleford 28-8, been beaten by Huddersfield 22-4, did win on the opening round 30 points to 12. So overall, we should be winning this game, shouldn't we?
I think so.
Dennis?
Have we got a call coming in?
Well, I've just realised I've not phoned Daniel for his prediction, so I'm trying to ring him now, but I think he's still in bed. So unfortunately, Daniel's missing the call, and he's nil and void this week. Nil and void. I'll try Callum as well. Bear with me. Keep talking, lads. Keep talking.
Well, anyway, I think the analysis is that I'm just still going for a win-loss, win-loss. I think I got it wrong last week. I think Steve proved us all wrong and managed to turn it around against Hull. But I think I'll go for a win against Hull KR and a loss against Catalans.
Well, I'm going to go all positive. I think we're going to get two wins. I think we have turned a corner. I think the romance between Widdop and... Oh, I think we've got Callum. Hello, is that Callum?
Yeah, mate, how are you? Okay?
G'day, mate. You're live on the podcast, Callum. Now, we forgot to get your results for the two games. Predictions. We've just played your analysis. We need two predictions from you, Callum, live on the podcast. Hull KR and then Catalans.
Hull KR away. I'll go with a win. And Catalan at home. Yeah, I'll go with a win as well. I think if we can keep going with what we showed last night, I think we can get two wins. Yeah.
Good on you, Callum. We'll speak to you soon, mate. All the best. So there you have it.
He was about to add to that. Anyway, can I just say, before you actually say, I mean, am I living in a different part of the world than you, Pet? Do you really think that we're going to be playing these games, or are we just still sort of like in a different time?
Australia's decided as of Monday, this is hilarious, the Australian Prime Minister, who is a huge Cronulla fan, announced yesterday, this is in Friday in Australia, that as of Monday, you'll only be allowed to gatherings of 500 people. So basically all sporting events are going to... So straight away, one of the journalists said to him, why are you not doing it this weekend? And he said, because I've got tickets for the game at Cronulla. Oh, dear. So, no, I think we'll play on. I just think we'll play behind closed doors, won't we? I think that's the only way forward. No,
I don't think
The cancelling events left, right and centre today, haven't they? They've cancelled the Premier League, they've cancelled the Scottish League, they've cancelled the Six Nations. I think one of the things was that when Paris Saint-Germain played behind closed doors Wednesday, there was about 16,000 people gathered outside the stadium to watch it on the phones together.
What's the point now of playing a rugby league season behind closed doors, and then every week you're just producing sort of like result? Here are the results.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, it works at Huddersfield every week.
Yeah, yeah, it does. But actually,
it won't affect Salford versus Catalan much at all.
Well, that's why we can just continue doing the podcast, because we can just sort of make up the scores and say this is how it would have finished every week.
Jesus. Okay, well, that's it. We're off next week due to the fact that we play Hull KR on the Sunday. So we'll see you back here on Monday, the 30th of March. Until then, reach out to us on Facebook, Brian Bevan, or at WhatBevan on Twitter. And keep those photographs coming in. Can anyone top Mrs. Jones on the beach in Western Australia? So with spring in the air, it's a spring equinox, 12-hour long day and a 12-hour long night from Sam.
All the best.
It's the comprehensional garter spring exerting outward radial force or extensional inward radial force from Dennis.
I've got to go. See you.
And as the hot water rises from the Earth's crust, it's a geothermal heated spring from me. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
I've got my toilet roll and my Weetabix. That's all I need.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the